Randy Reinholtz, the best director of community engagement and innovative programs from San Diego State University you could ever wish to connect with, and bringing Native American voices to the world via the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM.
Not that we like to undersell Randy in any way, shape or form, but welcome back, Randy Reinholtz.
Alex, who you got in the studio with you today?
We have the delightful editor of Gearheart Steampunk Review, Patricia H. Ash.
Hello!
And Patricia, you have got your credentials for Native Voices because you've just said you are...
A very, very small part Comanche.
Very, very small. How small a part Comanche are you then, Patricia?
Well, the family didn't actually talk about it a lot,
Sounds like a familiar story to me, Randy.
Yeah, it might be a little bit more than they're going to admit to.
She's like 1%.
That's like saying I'm part Sioux, you know?
It'd be great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather, something like that.
Okay.
Emma Tinson, of course, from Surrey.
Yeah, I'm pretty boring, my family history.
You're part Northern,
Actually, I have an interesting story because my grandparents were trying to find out the history of the Tinson family, and they traced it back to my great-great-great-great-grandparents or something, and they got married on this, like, tropical island, and I was like, oh, this is exciting, I've got something. But it turns out one of them was shipwrecked there, and the other one was in the Navy, so they were actually both from England.
That's a movie. So that's a romance. That's a movie.
That sounds interesting.
So I think I'm very, very English.
I wouldn't admit to that. Too often, you know, certainly. And Claire Margerison, of course, who's got some German connections.
Yeah, I'm quarter German. My grandmother came over from Germany in 1957. So I've got...
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Fünfundzwanzig Deutsch.
Yeah.
Besser. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Randy, that set the scene in terms of the terrific trio in the studio. You, together with the lovely Jean Bruce Scott, have just returned from the Sundance Film Festival.
We did, and the film...
And you got in.
Yeah, we did. We got to see a bunch of films, and the one that won the Audience Award and the Jury Award, which is unusual that the same film would win both. So it's taking back the name Birth of a Nation. You'll remember that film from the teen.
Probably one of the most racist movies ever. D.W. Exactly. Griffith, major blockbuster.
It was a very early film.
It was 1916.
A very early film.
It's only 100 years or so ago.
And this film features the story of Nat Turner, who was one of the first slaves to lead a very successful slave rebellion. Of course, he and everyone else that was connected to it were all put to death. We're a very violent country. But
happens if you allow your people to bear arms. I've said it time and time again, for goodness sakes.
Well, and learn to read. That would be...
Yeah.
Read and get information.
Randy, as ever, you know, not just from San Diego State University, but learn to read. Yeah, it's as shocking sometimes as I have to say feedback from one of the courses and modules I teach in for the English degree, and one of the comments from the students was, "We had too many books to read."
What?
English degree?
You'd be so surprised.
Much to learn here. I want to go someplace that expects less.
Yeah. There you go. So obviously, from that point of view, would you say it's something that will roll out from the point of view of the movie itself? Because there was a fear, I think, this side of the Atlantic, that maybe Daniel Radcliffe, who actually portrays a flatulent corpse, his movie might have actually won. But sadly, or you know, happily, for one reason or the other, it didn't. Still, there we are. It's I can't even remember the name of the title of the movie, but basically Daniel Radcliffe plays a corpse that's connected, and it's a strange routine.
And sounds bizarre.
And I say flatulent because obviously he's a corpse ceased to be, but there's still air there, so it's, you know, he communicates on it. It doesn't sound good, but still. It's not the sort of pitch I would go for, shall we say. But, you know, the life and times of how Emma Tinson's family got together, yeah, go with that.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
There's a short wreck in that one.
Definitely.
More interesting than a flatulent corpse playing out there. Still. But other than that, a good experience. I mean, because a couple of years ago, obviously, that Robert Redford decided to step back from the Sundance Film Festival, named, of course, after his character in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And what a positive, upbeat ending that always had, I feel. You know, it kind of summed up my life in so many ways as they sort of left the bank to a hail of gunfire. Every week I do these shows, Randy, I think one of these days, it's just I see those Mexicans out there.
There aren't quite as many guns in this country.
Why do you think I moved to the States? Anyway, but yes, from that particular perspective, did you feel it still got its magic? Because clearly movies, like anything else, that can be a matter of taste. It can be sort of up to people's own individual scenarios.
Well, I'm a terrible person to ask because I love movies, and the idea of going somewhere that's very isolated and seeing movies as fast as you can, running from one movie theater to the next, it's a lovely way to spend time. And then I had this brilliant morning. It snowed like crazy, and we're up in the Rocky Mountains, and I was with some friends, and they had this beautiful view off in the vista, and this herd of elk came in right as I happened to get up early. And it was sort of sunrise, and they came in, and they pawed, and they sat there in the snow. And then they simply stayed with us for breakfast for 4 hours. They just sat there sort of like we were looking at the mountainside, looking at the elk, and they had all sat down and sort of looked at the people. So we were species wandering and watching.
Nothing like a bit of species wandering to actually keep the world going. But time for a special announcement now, folks. I hadn't realized guilt is kicking into place because I've only just liked this moment. But yes, we can now announce that Native Voices has been named Resident Theatre at La Jolla Playhouse. It's
Ooh,
Resident Theatre Company.
Fantastic.
Is Native Voices.
Congratulations. I've got family in San Diego. I've actually been to the La Jolla Playhouse. It's a gorgeous venue.
Exactly. So there we are. It's good news all round there. So,
fantastic. Congrats.
Yeah.
Well, your listeners will know the Jersey Boys, the play, The Jersey Boys, which came out of La Jolla Playhouse. They produce a Tony Award-winning play, which is like our Olivier Awards, about every 2 or 3 years. So they're a fantastic production company. We're so happy to be there with them, and we stay at the Autry at the same time. We're growing. We're bringing more people into leadership positions, into producing positions. It's a very exciting time.
Well, as you know, Randy, I like to feel that the spurt of growth obviously coincided with Jean Bruce Scott making her debut on the Midweek Drive, telephonically speaking. I know she was very nervous the first time around, but, you know, she's, together with her good self, has become an essential part of the whole thing. So I like to think of a bit of British positivity. Think of us as your audio four-leaf clover from the old country.
Everything about seeing you, particularly in person, we have to come back. Yeah. We have to come back.
I think so. We need to have Randy and Jean back in the country again. Because you have them. Quite apart from the fact that Randy's driving skills were utterly experienced. Yes. You know, I mean, you take the character. Wait, the character's an airwolf, and you think this is not just an actor; it's a stunt person extraordinaire. The way it's the left side of the road, Randy. Left side of the road.
Scary.
Crazy. Claire, questions from yourself.
I guess I'd like to ask you about the kind of upcoming of lesser known voices and that sort of thing in theatre. I mean, my sister is a massive fan of Hamilton at the moment, and that sort of giving voice to those who previously did not have voice. How do you think it's changing, and do you think it's moving in the right direction in terms of like mainstream theatre?
Well, I think you're seeing people of colour interpret historical events and say, well, this is how we see these ideas, and this is why it's relevant today, and this is what it would mean. And is there a way of performing those ideas that would connect to a disenfranchised youth? We're kind of reliving this bizarre, hard civil rights era again in the United States, and there are all these young people, often of color, who are being, killed by our police. And, you know, there's a lot of fear and mistrust, and of course it's all building up around the wars that we're participating in tandem with our country's about to become not predominantly white. I think about 20 more years the country becomes not predominantly white, but of course all the major urban areas have been not a major, there's no majority race anymore. So there's not a way of looking at things. And if you keep it all with the presidential election that's going on here, it goes on forever, of course, and it's all paid for by billionaires and billionaires. And the crazy fear rhetoric that people have embraced, and of course what happens is someone will always step so far over the line that they offend so many people that things blow up again. So, yes, it is up to the artists to say, you know, we don't have to fear each other, but we do have to hear each other.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Emma.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, because there's been a bit of a scandal around the Oscars and how African-American people haven't really been nominated for any awards or anything like that. And I wanted to know, do you think it's different in the theatre and places like that? Do you think it's more open? Or do you think it's something that needs to be worked upon further?
The theatre is perhaps more polarised than Hollywood. It costs so much money to make a Hollywood-level film, and so that really limits it to the centralization of wealth that's happened in our country for the last several generations. And in theater, we're more radically embracing and engaging voices of color, but when we look at the mainstream theater, that is not true. You know, here we are, this time in 2016, only about 15 to 20% any given year of our plays are written by women. And you think, oh my gosh, women, that should at least be 50-50. The ticket buyers are predominantly women. We're in the 70% range of who buys tickets. So why aren't the stories being driven by people who want to tell the kinds of stories that the audience would want to see? And then when we talk about the arts in general and people of color, we hear a lot of national conversations, and people of color will say to liberal white Americans, hey, just because you're liberal and socially aware doesn't mean you don't have some racist tendencies. And people of color aren't being produced as often as they should be, particularly when we start looking at statistics. Again, women 50-50, that's a simple thing. And then people of color, you know, we should have 20, 30, 40%. And then within the subcategories there. But we're seeing more. George Takei had a beautiful show on Broadway. I think it closes this week. And it was about how Americans incarcerated Japanese Americans during World War II. It's called Allegiance. And it was just a fantastic show, and he did such good work with it. And it had a very international cast. So we're seeing more and more of these shows. And the market will demand it, even if the leaders are trying to line their own pockets. And not all leaders are that way. So many leaders are smart and thoughtful and inclusive, and that's why we're at La Jolla Playhouse. That's why we're working with Oregon Shakespeare Festival. We have these beautiful people that are insightful and saying there has to be a better way.
That's such an important and significant point that you raise, because sometimes we focus so much on the negative that we forget that there's a lot of good stuff out there as well. And that universality, that in a sense there's something quite apt about. We mentioned infinite diversity and infinite combinations in the first hour of the program with Vix and the Mischiefs. But from this point of view, George Takei, of course, and the original Lieutenant Sulu from the Star Trek series. Although I suppose he's given up on his chasing crewmen down the corridor with a sword these days. It's a thought.
But boy, he can dance and sing, let me tell you.
Oh my goodness, I love everything he does.
There we are. From your own perspective, listening there quite capably in your capacity as editor of Gearheart Steampunk Magazine, Patricia, any questions for Randy?
Yes, about the future. I haven't quite formulated this question. Maybe I should have written it down and then read it aloud.
She's from outside Dallas. Don't worry, Randy. It's a thing, you know.
The words just come out.
Exactly.
I'm so much better as a writer than I am as a speaker. But I was wondering about the future and how do you give this disenfranchised youth, how do you give them a voice? How do you move this to the next generation and the generations after that?
We have to invest in them, and it costs money. So, it's not always just simple education, K through 12, but the idea of teaching youth basic storytelling principles, giving them a way to make their voices heard, make their ideas known, let them tell us things they are thinking, be in situations where adults are listening, artists are listening, and then employ those ideas in our art making. We've had a generation of art making that's been very driven by the genius, and the genius is so insightful and so powerful that we'll listen to anything the genius says. And I think we need this collaborative time of art making where we're really reflecting what's going on. We're holding Shakespeare's mirror up to the world.
Randy, you'd be kind enough to stay with us. We've got a few other things we want to sort of share with you, but I'm going to offer you the opportunity to once again become our executive music producer here. We'll give you a choice of three sort of aspects here, any one of which you might think, yeah, that's okay, or that's totally inappropriate. Let's have another one. First one is by a band called Deep Forest, and it's channeling a whole range of other facts called Sweet Lullaby, including some of the sort of ancient sort of relaxing sort of melodies that are coming through with that. We've got a slightly more commercial Don Farden with Indian Reservation. See where we're going there? And of course we've got Wings, Paul McCartney and all, with Medicine Jar. Where do you want to go? Wings, Deep Forest, or Don Farden?
Well, I have to hear the Indian Reservation, I think.
Yeah, I thought so, actually, and it's one we've been holding back, because I thought one of these days we need to get Randy's views.
We need to get it.
On Don Farden's Indian Reservation. Originally released back in 1968, Someday Cherokee Indian Will Return. Don Farden, English pop singer, originally started life in Coventry. But Randy Reinholtz, what did you make of Don Farden's Indian Reservation?
Well, it's slightly prophetic. Here we are with about 150,000 Cherokee Nation members. We have several different branches of the Cherokee, some that remained in North Carolina, where they were removed under our president, Andrew Jackson. And then there was a large group moved to Oklahoma. About a third of the country died on the trail, the march. It was a forced removal, and they froze to death in the winter. But a good number survived, and those stories are being told. And these are stories that Americans, by and large, don't know. Mm. Don't know how the land was taken. And in that particular story, you have all the people who lived in Georgia and North Carolina, the Cherokee people who were removed. I think it was 15,000, maybe 14,000. Much like other genocides, all of their things were confiscated. And one of our artists, Delana Studi, who's fun to follow, she's got a great Facebook profile, she's been working on this project where she's been walking what we call the Trail of Tears. And she's been walking with her father. And her father speaks Oklahoma Cherokee, and it's been great to connect up with the Cherokees still in North Carolina. But she was saying all of the homes and all of the possessions in the homes were chronicled and detailed, and then they were auctioned off so the government didn't have to pay for the troops who kept watch over the Cherokee. And I think they gave them some food as they went.
Oh, that's very kind of them. Sorry. Again, with any situation, I think most nations on the planet have had periods of history which are embarrassing. Yeah.
Worked, yes.
Yeah.
And it's important to tell those stories.
Yeah.
Very.
Afterwards.
Exactly. Tell the story. Tell the story. Let's not live the story again.
Mm. Precisely.
Yeah.
Let's move on to consider another Native Voices genius, who I believe Randy might well have some awareness of, who's joining us again to return to the program in a few moments, Carolina Hoyos.
Oh!
Yay!
Oh,
yeah. Yes, if ever there was a reason to download the podcast yet again or to actually stay and go online, as Phil Leonis is hopefully doing, to actually tune in, this little bonus, Carolina, who, of course, her latest sort of piece, which is Los Estudiantes Espacionados.
Wow, that was amazing.
Look at you.
Yeah. Will be available in all sorts of other delightful things. But Randy, share with us your connection with Carolina, who's also, of course, on Native Voices at the Autry, or connected with the company.
She is an active member of our ensemble of artists. So Carolina dances, she sings, she acts, she's a multi-talented performer. She's worked in several of our projects through the years in Los Angeles, and then she's not someone who sits around hoping to be hired. She goes out and makes work, and I think this album that she's been working on, I know we were part of helping to, you know, give to the Kickstarter and all that, so she's out there making work, and it's fun. She's exciting. She is inspirational in that she causes other people to do their best.
And just to go to carolinahoyos.com, presumably, Emma, you've seen some of the magnificent stuff that she's actually put together.
No, I haven't, actually. I didn't have a time to go and look at the website, but it sounds fabulous. She sounds like a very multi-talented lady.
And as we said, like to keep the sort of the Native Voice of the Autry going, as we sort of pave the way, sort of warm-up act for Phil Leonis, who this week actually in Chilpark Hollywood has another sort of 12-minute little opus. I thought he was doing a Rod Serling from the Twilight Zone, but explains why in sort of not achieving his Academy Award situation as yet, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's kind of giving up the whole thing. You know, it's all important. I'm paraphrasing, of course, as we always do with Phil. Randy, as you rightly said, it's high time you sort of came back to together with Gene, to be back in Britain. Any plans for 2016? I think there was always a possibility, I would have thought.
I'm not sure 16 is going to work, but well, she put a little picture of a cottage on my webpage. And said, could we go here this summer? She does have the desire. And
let's face it, what Caitlin Shaughnessy says from Airwolf obviously goes in every way, shape, or form. It's critical from that point of view. Gene will hopefully. She's not sitting there waiting to be introduced, by the way, because I must admit, on the schedule, I had both of you there. So I was like, yeah, I was here, and you didn't say a word to me.
Exactly. No. She's frantically working the budget.
That's all right.
We had one production call this morning, and things look good, and got another show.
Yay, that's the important thing. And finally, for people who are flying over there and would like to sort of find out more about Native Voice of the Autry, or indeed see some of the events that are sort of coming up, any sort of final plugs you'd like to just share with us in terms of grand experiences? Obviously, as we've rightly said, you're at La Jolla, which is always marvelous from that point of view, but other sort of excitements that are coming?
Yes, we've got a new show opening at the end of February. It's called They Don't Talk Back. It's from the Tlingit culture in northeast Alaska. You'll know something about these people, though they're not well known, because they carved totem poles. So they're part of that part of the world. The visual aesthetic is amazing. We have music, we have poetry, we have language, all from this Tlingit culture. We were able to take the cast to a small fishing village about 300 miles out of the largest town that's 3,000 people, and we were in ceremonial spaces, and we can't wait to share this. It's a fun, easily accessible story, Country Mouse and City Mouse. They both learn something about the world, and at the same time, it's exotic and amazing, and we have a composer coming into town and a playwright coming into town, and we start rehearsal, and we open at the end of the month. They Don't Talk Ooh. Back at the Autry in Los Angeles.
Just genuinely Fabulous. Stupendous.
I wish we could go.
I think I need to go visit my parents.
Phil Leonis will go for us. Phil to work through and others as well from that point of view. Emma, go for it. Last two questions, please.
Of course, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Oh, the midweek drive company is one of my favourites in the world.
We do try our best, you know. And will you join us again on the show anytime soon?
I sure hope so.
Yay! Round of applause for Randy Reinholtz. Excellent stuff. And an insufferably catchy tune, which it just works now to lead into Carolina Hyers. It's The Sun.
So long now, I'm gone, I hold on, there's a better way. When you walked away, I would pray that you'd stay, but your wings just had to fly past me by. In your arms again I'll be someday. Until then I'll just be on my way. When you see the sun, does it sting? Does it bring the happiness you crave? Are you saved? You meant the world, now you're gone. I hold on, your precious heart still can be won. In your arms again I'll be someday. Until that I'll just be on my way. Does it bring the happiness you craved? Are you saved?
Of course you're saved, aren't you, Claire?
You are indeed.
You're saved, aren't you, Emma?
I'm saved.
And you're saved, aren't you, Patricia?
Yes, it's important to save your work before you close the document.
It's vital.
And we're saved because actress, singer-songrighter, multi-instrumentalist, and, as we said, lead person. Well, as Randy Reinholtz would say.
Lead person.
I think, let's face it, you know, native voices. It's been that native. Carolina Hyers, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hi, good, how are you?
We're delighted to touch base with your good self and pleased that your teaching schedule, your school schedule, managed to enable you to do a live link for us, because initially we thought we'd do a pre-record earlier in the day, but no, it's all changed and she can join us live again. Which means to move from Randy Reinholtz to Carolina Hoyos is just fantastic. Am I getting the pronunciation right there? Because I'm a bit confused. Because it's Carolina Hoyos. Are we right in that particular? Well,
yeah. Honestly, it's a translation since it's Carolina. So it could really be translated either way. I just got used to saying Carolina since it's the closest to the translation.
Have you seen that's it? And I know that Carolina will inevitably say, she probably burst into fits of, you've got me serious when I say, Los Estudiantes Apasionados. Sounds like a name.
The passionate students.
Exactly, the passionate students, yeah, precisely. Now, I have been privileged to see some of the episodes, binge-watching on The Passionate Student. And it's surreal.
Oh, good.
Exactly. It is surreal in every sense of it. Would you like to just set the scene for the benefit of the British listener who might be sort of thinking, what does he mean? The passionate student, you know, or even with the translation to Los Estudiantes Apasionados. I just like the phrase. It's like SOS on Robo, but that's also from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And, you know, and that's why you do Rob Banks quite happily. You know. Anyway, Carolina, share with us the précis of what it's all about.
Well, this is a language learning series that, funny enough, the Department of Labor commissioned it. The Digital Learning Group made it, and they had in their budget kind of a bonus episode for each level that these people were learning on the job. It was a job training, language learning series on the job. And every chapter that they passed, they would get an unlocked episode to watch as kind of a bonus to help them learn English.
It's like a motivating thing in every sort of way. I mean, we've seen Francisco there, we're seeing Paloma, and that whole sort of sequence of base. Jose Manuel. Joanna, and of course, your good self actually sort of looking as though you're in the sort of hospitalized scenario there, but just generally all around wonderful. It's genius. What about some teaching bonus?
Innocent.
Well, yeah, but you see, Patricia, clearly that's the motivation. We give the students bonus video content to actually access.
It's brilliant. It's a brilliant teaching technique.
Exactly.
Isn't it? It gives them something to literally look forward to.
spoken as a true Veronica, it has to be said, which is great. And of course, we move from that particular number to the Disney sort of sequence that we've put through, in which case you're kind of channeling a whole series of sequences from the notion of past Disney experiences and the lines from that. So as we sort of pull this up on the system, another little classic in its own way, Caroline, would you like to just share what's been happening with respect to this Real Housewives of Disney, the villains?
Well, that's a collaboration with my friend Sheila. She's an avid YouTuber, and she's been doing quite well with that. She's done so many different characters. And we, you know, I kind of always try to put my dog in everything I do. she's always trying to get in front of the camera, so she's kind of a natural, and she's great on camera.
Carolina, you've got your dog, but Fuzz Aldrin obviously owns Phil Linus, so you got Fuzz Aldrin, and there's the dog.
Oh, what a cute dog!
It's Cruella de Vil, or is it? And her dog.
Yes.
She's cute, baby. Oh, that's kind of wrong, Cruella de Vil with a dog.
Well, the thing is, in this episode, they're all they're villains that were brought in to get booked. You know, they've been committing crimes, but she's a rehabilitated Cruella, so she's fought her urges, and now she's kind of trying to help save the dogs instead of get fur from them.
And that's the reason why, as you rightly said, Emma, it's difficult to keep up with what Carolina's sort of involved with, because we haven't got into A Girl I Know, this particular sort of aspect, but that's a different
idea. There's so much to cover.
Exactly. And, of course, native voices at the Autry. So, Claire, questions from yourself?
I'd like to ask you about how you got into this. in terms of doing the sort of the YouTube aspect as well as sort of stage and theatre, or which do you prefer?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Having spent three seasons on MTV Hits, appearing as yourself in Gene Simmons' Family Jewels, which could be an interesting double entendre if you had this particular side of the Atlantic, but never mind, you know. Pharrell Williams' video of Happy. Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly. And shared the stage with Eddie Van Halen. Did you have to jump?
I actually couldn't because I was playing a piano, but there was somebody doing contortionist work above me, like silk dancing. So she was kind of in the air.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's why we mark out Caroline as a Renaissance woman. It's classic. And of course, Ryan Adams, Guns and Roses. I'm sorry, Claire, it's your question. Go for it.
Yeah, which do you prefer doing? Like, what's one of the favourite things that you've done, do you think?
Oh, wow. I think because it's become so varied, it's helped me get to the point where I want to make my own film that's already scored, if that makes any sense. Yeah. Usually someone makes a film and then they score it. But my score happened and then the story came to me and then all of a sudden I saw a visual and I thought, oh, no. The end is near. I have to make a film. So I think that's going to be the most exciting and most intensely difficult thing I've ever done.
Looking to the back end of last year, of course, congratulations. You shot a lead role in the comedy The Gym, starring, of course, Quentin Aaron from The Blind Side, about a rundown gym full of slackers.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds like my sort of gym.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good.
And indeed,
it's every gym in January.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It could be just the classic in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to see on the website music by a girl I know.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Sort through our way through that. In fact, we're trying to access the digital versions. Didn't quite succeed on that today, Carolina. But never mind. You know, we thought we'd go in with the classic, the song.
Always next exactly. time.
Patricia.
Oh yes, what?
Thoughts from yourself.
Well, this all sounds very, very fascinating. I'm curious about your work that's on YouTube. How do you make that succeed?
And why? Why are you thinking about
now that there's? Well, because yeah, it is kind of a recipe that some people can crack. I mean, sometimes you can't. You don't have any control over it whatsoever. It depends on people sharing. I know, so one of the episodes, I was on that show, I didn't know I was pregnant. I know some actors who don't want anybody to know that they were on that show, but I don't care. I think it's hilarious, and it's also got a rabid following.
Yeah. I mean, we're familiar, obviously, with I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on that particular stage, which apparently has been doing great guns after the X-Files in Australia, but that's nice. But I didn't know I was pregnant. Would you like to set the pitch for that? What is the theme of that particular show? Is it? I mean,
it's got, like, I think 3 or 4 seasons worth of stories of people who had no idea they were pregnant until they were giving birth.
Nice.
And these, my particular... well, actually, not mine, but one of the other stories. The girl was probably 110 pounds, and she was maybe 3 months or 4 months in, and you know, she just thought she had, you know, some cramping and maybe some gluten intolerance swelling. Like it didn't seem like, you know, she was still getting her period, and there wasn't any other signs, and then all of a sudden she's giving birth. And there's a lot of stories like that.
I'm quite glad I'm a male, but never mind. You know,
I may have seen that episode.
I think I love the fact that with something like online video, like web series, you can do things that otherwise wouldn't be made, and like that is a prime example of that. There's a lot of like little web series that I used to follow avidly, and I think they're really great.
I'll read out the comment from Phil Leonis, because I think you need to hear this, Carolina. Most of the time, it's fun being me. I'm not going to channel my inner Phil Leonis because I feel that would be wrong. Especially on Wednesday mornings when, after a meeting of the always thrilling Los Angeles Breakfast Club, I get to enjoy good conversation with my friend Alex Levchuk on his Midweek Drive programme for Siren FM and Southside Broadcasting in the UK. And when I get to follow the great Carolina Hoyos, who was one of my favourite guests ever on your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Favourite guests ever. This show's been going over 7.5 years.
Quite a victory there.
Favourite guests ever. He's a lucky, lucky man. There you have it.
Pretty fortunate.
It's little wonder Dean Haglund had to leave the country and go to Australia. He realised he couldn't compete in the same studio. Sorry, Dean. So appreciative. Emma, any final concluding things that you'd like to sort of say at this stage? Or
yeah, I mean, you seem so multi-talented. We were looking at your website and all the different things you've done. Was there like an age where you realised that you wanted, you know, you were this theatrical personality and you wanted to go into acting and singing and all this kind of stuff? Or have you always, from a young age, wanted to do it?
Well, I started playing piano when I was 2. The earliest memories I have were when I was 3.5. So I don't remember actually choosing music. I know music chose me. But when I was about 6, I think, it was first grade, I got cast to play a captain and on a ship on some, you know, one of those little plays that you put up at the front of class and you have the cardboard cut out of the boat. And I remember wearing my hair up in a hat and kind of just commanding everybody to do stuff. And maybe that's interesting. I got hooked at that moment and I was like, wow, this is different than sitting quietly and playing the piano and letting my fingers do the talking. And here I am. It's interesting because I don't even think as an actor that was my calling. It was maybe more of directing because I was telling everybody what to do, but in a character sense. But yeah, that was the first foray into acting, and then it snowballed from there.
I'm sensing a biopic coming on here. I'm thinking motion picture, which would actually work for you. Carolina can play herself.
So adorable.
I think we'll get the 2 or 3. She can start off, you know, 2 or 3 year old playing the piano, probably Scarlatti, you know, nice and simple, you know, sort of routine. It's genius. And
we'll have to do a wide casting call to find that 2 year old.
That 2 year old. Ooh, and the dog could be in it.
and Phil Lynas can direct it, for which he will get his Academy Award. Sorted. Done and dusted. Okay, right. Emma, last 2 questions, please, for Carolina. We're moving up in all sorts of other ways now. Go for it.
Carolina, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us on the show today?
Of course I do.
Aw, good.
You're our favourite guest ever.
In that case, would you like to join us again on the programme anytime soon?
Oh, definitely. Of course, of course.
A round of applause for Carolina Hoyer. So go to carolinahoyer.com. Splendid. Exactly. And whereabouts in Los Angeles are we actually speaking to you, just so we actually have a scene here? Because I need to know when we sort of navigate to Phil Lynas in terms of how far away you guys are at this particular stage. So whereabouts in LA are you based?
I'm in the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, very good. Yeah, that's a legendary Hollywood
very
Hills.
Very beautiful.
There's gold and Carolina Hoyos in them there hills.
And coyotes.
And coyotes. Coyotes. Oh, dear. Wile E. Coyote, of course, takes us into a whole new field. Roadrunner. Beep, beep.
Take care of your dog.
A slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance confirmation, a loose affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and babies. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long slow-mo, the way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in the corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry.
10:30 a.m. in L.A. can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Lynas, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
Okay, we know it's 10:40, but you can forgive us with respect to having the fabulous Carolina on the programme. And as you said, Emma, it's passed very quickly this week.
Yes, it it has. This week, the show has gone zoomed by very speedily, I think.
That's a time machine.
Well, it has for me, anyway.
There we are. What are you saying? It normally drags. Just focus on the positive. It's all important, because that way you'll get your Academy Award and all will be well. Sorry, the 10 minutes that opened up Chill Pack Hollywood almost had me in tears this week. I was thinking, Phil, he's gone from Star Trek The Motion Picture and now he saw it 50 times.
50.
Great. And people were saying it wasn't very good, but he went with it. It's an important thing. Phil, welcome back to the program. How are you, sir?
That's great that it only seemed like 10 minutes, because it was much closer to 15. And, you know, who cares that it's 10:40 when I am now officially referred to as cultural correspondent? The fact that that made it to my intro inspired me to actually add cultural correspondent to my LinkedIn profile. I don't know if you use LinkedIn there in the UK, but so it's an official part of my curriculum vitae. Now,
would you like me to endorse you, Phil?
Yeah.
No, please don't. Please don't. Like what I wrote about LinkedIn, I don't really understand how to use LinkedIn, quite frankly, but it's got all the social awkwardness of an actual in-person networking mixer, only with far more unwanted email. That's how I think of LinkedIn. But Alex, I tip my cap to you for the influence, and yet I have to wag my finger, because really, 7.5 years of Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, Alex?
No, 7.5.
We had our Fellini episode in November,
which
is when we turned 8.5. There you are. Hey, I got to tell you this, though. I love that you played me in with really just one of the great songs ever, from one of the great albums ever, from one of the great artists ever. So there, we've established the greatness of it. I was suddenly brought back to one time on one of those crazy long road trip drives Dean Haglund and I would have, and we were driving, I think it was back from northern Arizona, the desert of northern Arizona, to Los Angeles, and there is a huge stretch of nothing. I mean, I think you could get from London to the tip of Scotland and back again in the amount of time it takes to traverse this desert. And I remember getting home and seeing a tweet that Dean had posted while we were driving, and I just found it and wrote down exactly what it was. Here's his tweet. Dear God, Phil Lernis knows all the lyrics to Paul Simon's Graceland album.
Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland. I'm going to Graceland. Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah, not necessarily. I knew all the lyrics, not necessarily the tone in which they were delivered, of course. But anyway, that brings back very good memories for me, and again, probably a reason why he's relocated to Australia.
This coming Monday, Channel 5, terrestrially, will be actually screening the first episode in the new miniseries of The X-Files. Mind Camp.
Will they be doing it terrestrially, or will they be doing it extraterrestrially?
Exactly. It's
see
a pre-
what I
yeah, genius, and it's a precursor to Gotham. So you see, in the States, they actually sort of have it. Well, in Australia, they have it used as a precursor to sport. In Britain, Channel 5, precursor to Gotham.
Of course.
Very good. So we look forward to that. I mentioned Mind Camp. Of course, it's called My Struggle, but nothing to do with Adolf, as far as I know. No spoilers, but cigarette-smoking man is still alive.
Okay. So again, as you know, because you've heard the show, and I can't emphasize this enough for all your listeners, lower those expectations if you're an X-Files fan for that first episode. It's clunky. It's really bad. It makes you think, oh my goodness, they've lost the plot.
Sorry, Patricia.
It
starts off with Mulder doing a
placed upon them. It was just an unwieldy burden. I don't want to give any spoilers.
No.
It's just I'm saying lower the expectation. And if you're a first-time viewer, let it go. Don't worry about this. This in no way indicates the quality of the show that was before. And thank goodness the quality of the show that's coming. By the third episode, and you've got to realize they've been away from doing these episodic shows for 13 years, and it's been many, many years since the second movie. They did need to find their footing again. And by the third episode, which aired this week, so I can finally officially say it, they're back to the quality worthy of the best episodes of 15, 20 years ago.
The expulsion of the air that you just heard there, Phil, the expulsion of air was actually Patricia giving a sigh of relief.
Well, because the reviews have been very, very, and again, justifiably so, unkind. And I think it was a real mistake to show critics that first episode instead of showing them maybe the first and the third, or maybe another one, just a standalone episode to let critics know, hey, we found it. We did find it. But I think they got a false sense of security because they showed that first episode at fan events, and the fans went crazy. But, of course, nostalgia will, and this was the point, I guess, of how I opened my show this week, nostalgia affects how we view things. And once nostalgia melts away, then you're left with maybe coming back to something going, wow, that isn't exactly what I remembered. So anyway, but the good news is they really do find it. So enough about me plugging something that I make no money from. Let's. What else should we talk about, Alex?
It's nostalgia. It's not what it used to be. You can talk about the program if you wish. Yeah, sometimes the older ones are the better ones.
Remember when we used to talk about nostalgia?
Oh, those were good times. Good times.
I have a question for you, Phil.
Go, Claire.
Okay. How is incorrect?
How is your cat yoga going?
My cat yoga. It was a rough day with the Fuzz Aldrin. It's actually been a little bit of a rough week. She's been incredibly neurotic about food. Some fleas got into the apartment yesterday. Just a lot of upheaval, and I'm realizing that part of it was her finally letting go of the stress of having me be gone so much and with such rapid fire departures because I've been dealing with family matters, and we had spent more than a year without a night apart from each other, and now she doesn't understand why I'm abandoning her. Aww. Clearly I must be doing so to leave her to her death. So it's been a little rough. She's glaring at me right now, and
well, we're looking at her photograph.
She knows that
we'll put her on the phone. We'll interview her.
You know, she, as Alex can tell you, she's gotten on the phone and made her presence known. But I think right now she's in her trailer sulking, demanding better treatment. Yeah.
Fresh from their trip to London and back again, it's like a hobbit's journey, isn't it? Sitting outside the studio as we speak, David J. Howe and Sam Stone and Lindsay Gold all actually searched to do a little bit of pre-wrecking for the Stone tapes, which the listener can actually hear tomorrow at 7 o'clock after the news. Oh no, it's actually next week. I forgot. It's Sound and Next Vision that tomorrow. That's very confusing. Next week, Thursday.
Scheduling.
I know.
You've got
it's
too
all
many
very...
shows to think
but
about.
They probably
it's
haven't...
those time machines again. They confuse everybody.
They haven't managed to catch the midweek drive. So Phil, what bits from the sections of the show that you've accessed, and presumably you missed the Fuzzbox thing entirely, so you'll just have to catch that, you know, via joys. I mean, we did all that link, Fuzzbox and Fuzz Aldrin.
Yeah. Yeah.
All in the first hour of the program.
A tenuous link, but you know, there's a fuzz there.
Fuzz Aldrin, female, Vix and the Mischiefs,
yeah.
All female.
Yeah.
Exactly. And of course, Cameron's sort of suggestion and the Grascals, a bit of bluegrass from that point of view. But other than that, what things would you actually like to flag up that Sam, who's actually now joined them after a little comfort break, and Lindsay and of course the listener, would like to sort of say, yeah, that's why we should go to the podcast. Phil, the critical floor is now yours.
Well, I wanted to just talk about Randy Reinholdt, the Native Voices, for a moment. I was, and again, just how great being a part of the Midweek Drive is. I am a member now, an official member of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, of which Lily Holloman is the president. And each week we have different speakers that come ostensibly to speak about something that has to do with either Los Angeles history or the culture and community of Los Angeles or some kind of public good of Los Angeles. And we're always looking for new speakers, and the Los Angeles Breakfast Club Foundation often makes grants to organizations that are represented by those speakers. And I'm listening to the show this morning, and I realize, you know, Randy Reinholdt and Native Voices are in the exact same park where the Los Angeles Breakfast Club meets. How come it had not occurred to me to have him come and speak about Native Voices so that we can help support that? It takes a online, in our case, voyage all the way to Lincoln and then back again to the very same park for the idea to finally find fertile soil. But so I'm going to reach out to Randy as soon as the show is over and try to find a time to have him come in. So thank you again, Alex.
It's what we do.
The magic inspiration.
Magic of the midweek time.
You know, putting the things together. Even on the west coast of America. So there we are. It's always important.
Well, what I love about it is it's a metaphor, like this artist and philosopher who was in my film, Truth Is Out There, talked about that, you know, if you think of the brain, you know, the brain is a sphere, just like the planet. And the more we are able to connect different synapses in the brain by learning new skills through our lives, the healthier our brain is throughout the course of our lives. And if you think about it, the internet allows for that very same possibility. Here is a synapse firing off thousands of miles away and back again and making that connection, which just feels incredibly, in terms of the use of this medium, incredibly healthy. But I need advice from you, Alex. Maybe you have some expertise in this. One of the things that I'm going to be doing for the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, because now in its
91st year, you're ringing the year 91.
Thank you. Oh, well, now fine, 7.5 years of Chilpack Hollywood. That's okay then. Touche, good sir. But in its heyday, this show was broadcast. I mean, the club was broadcast nationwide on radio because there is, like I said, always a presentation and a performance each week. And it was broadcast on radio nationwide. And we have in the archives some vinyl records of these classic shows, but a great deal of reel-to-reel tape of the original broadcasts. And Alex, do you have any advice for me at all? Because I imagine that you've encountered this through your long and august career in terms of preserving that tape and
digitize as soon as possible.
Archiving it.
Digitize it as soon as possible.
The best way to do that is to go to someone who's an expert in that kind of thing and dealing with these sensitive materials?
Presumably, are we talking about, and this is going to get technical, are we talking about 8-inch, quarter-inch tape here? Are we talking about the standard recording devices that electromagnetic tape works on from the Grundig onwards? Or have I just said complete nonsense?
Sure. I mean, right now, so out of my pay grade. No, I haven't even seen it. I haven't seen the tape yet. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to breathe on it because I'm so scared it will dissolve.
No, like film.
Sounds like you need an expert.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and I could be flown over, I suppose. But...
exactly.
Ooh,
exactly.
Nice vacation.
Or I was gonna ship the tapes to you.
Well, there you are. It's either way. To work that way through that. Nice to see
a man with a silver briefcase handcuffed to the briefcase.
Yeah.
Carrying the tape to you. Yeah.
Exactly. That's the kind of message that we enjoy and appreciate in every sense of the word.
And the code to open it will be 000 destruct. I knew you would enjoy that. I knew Alex would enjoy
Superb.
That. That spoiler alert. That's how you blow up the Starship Enterprise. Okay. Go ahead.
This conversation is getting way too nerdy.
It's surreal. But Patricia, have you got any questions you want to put to Phil? As you've actually just successfully completed 2 hours in the program in a chair where you haven't been tucked to one side,
with
haven't just stayed.
I've got my own microphone. I've got my own headphones. It's amazing. We've been looking at pictures of your cat.
Yeah.
I've just been completely distracted by Buzz. She's very adorable.
So there we have it. You can.
And she knows it. And she knows it.
Oh,
the thing, too.
Yeah.
I mean.
Exactly. So, Patricia, a number between 2 and 26, please.
Ooh, 13. 13's lucky for me.
You're getting it for 13.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the top 10 once again.
The top 10 signs a really huge dream of yours is about to come true are, number 10, you regularly visualize the end result, the after party, or beyond. Number 9, every day you show up doing something about it. Number 8, you're not attached to how it will come true. 7, it really matters to you. You really care. Number 6, you know who the first 3 people are that you'll call with the news. Number 5, you're smiling and winking way more than normal. Number four, sometimes you speak and behave as if it already has. Three, it probably doesn't depend upon specific people. Two, you already know what your next goal is. And the number one sign a really huge dream of yours is about to come true, you keep whispering, sweet, thank you, yes, with clutched fist. Sweet, thank you, yes, the universe. Did you just smile and wink? Good. Keep on it.
It's pretty much what will happen when you do the interview with Phil Leonis about his views on fans and all the rest of the
yes.
pieces. Yeah,
sweet.
Claire, would you like to put those last two questions to the man in LA?
Indeed. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Phil?
Oh, have we started?
There you just go.
Yes, of course I have.
So fast.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Okay, you twisted my arm.
Yay.
Sure, I'll be back.
Yay!
The important thing. Thanks certainly to Cameron Tilbury, to Vix, from, of course, Vix and the Mischiefs, to Randy Reinholtz, to Carolina Hoyas, and Phil Leonis, and you, dear listener. Thank you, Patricia. Ash, of course, people can go to the Christmas competition on
GearHeartsMag.com.
GearHeartsMag.com. Emma, thank you.
Thank you.
Back in the morning.
Yes.
Yay.
Bright and early. Only 1 hour, though. I'm back to just 1 hour.
Oh, well.
So sad.
And Claire back as well.
I am full 2 hours.
There we are. With
She's a hardcore
I
girl,
am.
That one.
I am.
We'll work our way through that whole sequence. It's going to be absolutely sensational. That's pretty much it. We're off, at least two or three of us, to actually sort of work with The Stone and David J. Howe. The Stone, actually. Sam Stone, let's be honest, is to work through that package, I think, which will be broadcast also. It's Stone Tapes. Volume...
9, 10.
I think.
I've lost count. I'm not good at maths.
It is number 10. So pretty much we're almost out of here. Great stuff continues with respect to Siren 107.3 FM. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
And would you believe it? It's actually going to be Al Green and Let's Stay Together, which takes us out of the news.
Aww.
So it was a wonderful sort of thing to work through that. I could crossfade into something completely different, but I thought, no, we'll go out with that. And it gives them at least a minute or so to really work through. Something that I think Fuzz would appreciate, really. All the way in LA.